south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Now, here's something I haven't talked about before, at least not in any great detail, but I do get emails about it, emails most exclusively from guys, so ladies out there, just bear with me a bit, will ya? I'm talking about gambling down here in Latin America, which includes casinos and sports betting and lotteries and all that. Well, I'd just like to mention that for all you guys interested in sports betting, sports gambling, there are some great opportunities down here that really tilt things in your favor. And it's all because of that so-called gringo advantage again, combined with some common sense, of course. Now, let me explain. Latins are extremely patriotic. Actually, they're hopelessly patriotic, especially when it comes to their sports teams. Kind of like Chicago Cubs fans, you know? And because of that inborn Latin extreme irrational patriotism, any level-headed gringo can really make a killing down here, specifically during football season and especially during World Cup season. Now, they say patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels, something I totally agree with. But don't go blabbing that to a Latin person because they'll have none of that. Seems that absolutely every Latin person I know loves his country to bits, no matter how chaotic and corrupt. Even though most of them would definitely rather be in the United States living the American dream. I mean, come on, it's obvious the way they risk their lives to get there. And how do they reconcile that? I mean, patriotism versus the American dream? After all, you can't have both, right? Well, they think they can, but how do they reconcile it? Easy. All you have to do is talk to a Latin American immigrant up north in the States, illegal or otherwise, and he'll tell you that he came to the States chasing the American dream, and when he gets it and stocks away a bit of a bank account, his long-term retirement plan is to go back home to Honduras, Nicaragua, or Ecuador and live like a king on that Social Security check. Sound familiar? It should. What do they know that you don't know? It's just about what every Latin immigrant will tell you. They want to go back to the country of their birth, even though their country was not at all kind to them or their family, since they were born in squalor there. Yet that irrational hyper-patriotism persists. It's as if a poor guy from a Chicago ghetto escaped, made his mark on the world, but still harbored nothing but nostalgia for the place. And crazier yet, he planned on going back to live out his retirement years in the old neighborhood and have the nicest house in the ghetto, for what that's worth. Sounds totally irrational, but that's one common definition of nationalism or patriotism. Look it up. It's an irrational pride and belief that your country or place is superior to everyone else's. And like I've mentioned before, and it's very politically incorrect to say this, but Latins are quite uneducated by first world standards. And the truth is, the less educated a person is, the more gullible. And on top of that, Latins are extremely superstitious too, especially about sports and their sports heroes. And of course, to a lesser degree, that's true up in the States and up in the First World. The First World exception to that being those UK sports hooligans who tear up stadiums and cause riots. But I think that has more to do with the round-the-clock boozing than anything. But Latins really take it to the extreme. Now, I know a lot of expats who've been down here for a long, long time, and some of these guys know just how to make money from Latins and their irrational sports obsessions. These gringo expats realize that despite what the odds makers say, a huge majority of Latins will always bet that the home team or the national team will win, whether it's facing an opponent from a nearby country, or for example, a Latin American team in the World Cup facing some real international powerhouse like England or Germany. And I've seen it myself around World Cup time. You can walk into any bar or restaurant, low, middle class, or highbrow, and everybody in the bar will be absolutely glued to the TV while the game's on. Always, and I mean always, rooting for the home team. And I've seen certain gringos, like, for example, expat Eddie, walk into a bar like that about a half an hour before a game starts and basically take on the house against the home team and walk out with $300 or $400 in his hand a few hours later. And why is that? Because astute expats like Eddie check the international odds online and the Vegas odds, of course. So first world guys like Eddie are well prepared to bet on a sure thing. And the locals who show up at the bars rooting like nutcases for the home team are easy marks for unemotional guys who study the odds. The fact is, emotional locals, they'll always take a bet with guys like Eddie. But you know, sometimes, being that this is Latin America, and people are always short on cash, the winner doesn't always get paid off in the moment like he should. And the fact is, if you don't get your money right then and there, you're probably never going to see it. So, like Eddie says, you've got to have some rules when you're going to gamble with Latins. First of all, you always go to the middle or upper middle class bars when you're making those kind of bets. Number two, always make sure the guy you're betting with shows you his money up front, just like you show him yours. Number three, if you're going to pull something like this off during the World Cup season, it's a good idea to move around from bar to bar. That, according to expat Eddie, is how you really clean up. Because if you're familiar with the World Cup, you know they play dozens and dozens of games. And you can bet on each one of those rounds because they'll almost always have a Latin American team or two battling it out for a playoff spot. And then when the playoffs come, you'll have your choice of Latin teams there too. So let's say you're at the Hard Rock Hotel in Panama, a high-end place with a lot of high-rolling Latins hanging around. Well, even if Panama's football team had never even made it to the playoffs, got knocked out of the competition weeks before, it doesn't matter, because if there's another Latin American team scheduled to play another team from anywhere else at all, everyone will still be huddled around the TV sets. It doesn't matter that the home team, Panama, has been knocked out of the running. Now, Latins, of course, are absolutely nuts about the home team. But when the home team's been knocked out, the teams of their closest Latin neighbors become their new favorites. For the duration of the season, that is. Even though just a few short weeks earlier, they were bitter enemies when playing against Panama, our home team example. Everyone's still nuts about the game. Every game. As long as there's still hope for a Latin American country victory. That irrational Latin nationalism and patriotism will kick into high gear every time. In fact, you wouldn't believe how many Latin American males scheduled their vacations for the playoff weeks. To the chagrin of their wives, of course. Now, down here, they do have the equivalent of Latin American football wives, too, just like they have in the States. But mostly, that's a phenomenon just like the States, where most of those women only watch the TV games with their husband or tag along to the stadium because they know if they don't, their husbands will be out with the boys getting drunk and watching the games. Like one upper middle class Latin lady told me, it's certainly not quality time spent with her husband because the other guys are all there too, but it is, quote, time with her husband, unquote. So, like I said, when there's a football game on, everybody in the house who's of Latin descent is going to be screaming for that Latin win, no matter how the odds are stacked against that happening. So, like expat Eddie says, expats of a certain gambling disposition can and do make a nice little bundle for themselves during certain parts of the year, primarily betting against the home team when the true mathematical odds are against it. Now, you might ask, how many of the 20 Latin American countries actually make it to the very end of the World Cup finals and win? Because that, of course, will have a lot of bearing on your betting strategy. Well, the stats show that only two teams, Brazil and Argentina, have actually won a World Cup in the last 60 or so years. None of the other 18 Latin countries have made it. So much for patriotism and wishful thinking, huh? But like Eddie says, don't ever bet against Brazil. They're the glaring exception to the rule. They always get into the finals, and many times they actually win. But here's the wild card in all of that. Because Brazil does have that winning reputation, the rest of Latin America, the other 19 countries, often become contrarians. They just love to see Brazil lose, anytime, any place. Everyone wants to see the mighty take a fall once in a while, right? So don't rule out placing a bet on Brazil just yet, because a lot of times you'll be sitting in a bar during World Cup time, and the entire establishment will be booing and hissing against Brazil. And like Eddie says, that's the time astute expats make their move. Betting for Brazil to win, not against it, since many locals who absolutely hate Brazil will take that bet. But what about regular casino gambling? Well, practically every Latin American country has casino gambling, legal or otherwise. And the big surprise is, in many Latin American countries, casino gambling is illegal, yet you see casinos everywhere, mostly in big hotels. many big first world hotels too, like Radisson's and Clarion's and the Hotel Princess chain and the Intercontinental chain too. But the untold secret is, those hotels don't own those casinos, they just rent out the space to a casino operating company that brings in all the machines and the tables and the dealers and all that. So basically, it looks like these big hotels are sponsoring these casinos, yet they're technically operating at an arm's length from the main hotel chain. Because think of it. If, for example, casino gambling is illegal in Honduras, and every big hotel in San Pedro Sula has casino gambling and advertises it outside as you drive by, in big, bold letters, no less, well, big international first world hotel chains have to remain on the up and up with international and local laws. And local laws are always changing, depending who's got the political power. For example, once in a while in every Latin American country, there'll be a presidential candidate running who's an evangelical Christian, a real Bible thumper. Now, these guys are all hypocrites, and many of them actually own brothels on the side, and all of them have mistresses. Yet they'll come on as hardcore evangelical Christians with an anti-vice platform. But that doesn't scare hotel operators with casinos on the premises because it's the casino operator who's got to deal with any changes in the law. Not the hotel itself because the casino is only a renter. And by the way, casinos can always skirt a change in the law. The fact is, a lot of the high-end lawmakers and politicians are in on it. For example, in most Latin American countries, casino gambling as we know it in Vegas is technically illegal. Yet some countries like Bolivia have 80 to 100 casinos right out in the open, even though the law only allows what they call soft gambling, just games like bingo and some odd Latin numbers games that we've never even heard about, along with certain types of one-armed bandits. And manipulating these dealer games and machines is one of the ways that these gaming companies so easily skirt the law. Because, you see, Latin American laws spell out exactly and precisely what kind of gambling is illegal. For example, blackjack. We all know exactly what blackjack is, right? So what these casino operators do is they create a new game that's almost like blackjack, but not blackjack exactly, so it's not strictly prohibited. And that's why when you go into a lot of these Latin casinos, you'll see games you've never seen before, with a ton of people playing them. Oh, and let me add that the big Russian casino operators are moving into Latin America big time. And they've got the money and the muscle to buy their way in. But the real corruption in the Latin casino business comes from the very high-level politicians like presidents and vice presidents, and surprisingly, their wives. Now, like I said before, many types of casino gambling is illegal in Latin America, yet you see casinos everywhere. Yet no one's getting raided. In fact, a lot of these places are elegant and very high-end. So, what's up with that? Well, you see, in Latin America, it's all about loopholes, and politicians create loopholes on purpose. And that's a lesson they've learned very well from expert scumbag politicians on both sides of the aisle up in the States. Anyway, here's what you didn't know. Quite a large number of the licenses for casinos in Latin America are registered as not-for-profit corporations. In fact, basically, charitable organizations. Say what? Charitable organizations? Casinos? That's right, and here's how it works. In more than one Central American country, there are some very big high-end casinos that were given their licenses because the wife of the president of the country at that time, and her lawyers, of course, set it up in the corporate books, promising a certain percentage of the profits to go to charity, always to a charity that she personally designates, and since this is Latin America, one that has absolutely no oversight. In other words, the books are closed. That means zero transparency. So, all of a sudden, a brand new casino is born as a charitable organization. And since the books are not transparent, well, you get the idea. So, remember, next time you drop a dime at a casino in Honduras or Guatemala or Bolivia or Ecuador or Argentina, some of your loss is a poor kid or a poor family's gain. And if you believe that, I've got a test tube full of Elvis's DNA that I'll sell you for $50. Anyway, Latins, they love their gambling just like first world people do. In fact, They've got all kinds of lotteries going. So many, in fact, you can't keep them straight. They've got national lotteries, departmental lotteries, city lotteries, municipal lotteries, church lotteries, you name it, they've got it times 10. And who's monitoring or keeping track of the winners and losers? Well, basically, nobody. Just like when you open a restaurant or a bar, or build a house or a commercial building, once you've got that permit, chances are you'll never see an inspector again. Especially if you're off the tourist trail. Now, about all these lotteries going on down here, gringos and expats never play them. And, by the way, there's no such thing as a scratch-off instant lotto card. There are no instant winners. You always have to check the papers later on to see if your numbers come up. It's that lag time thing again. And I predict when those scratch-off lottery cards do arrive here, there's going to be huge money in it. So there's an expat opportunity just waiting to blossom right there. You be the first one to introduce those down here, and there won't be a bank big enough to hold your profits. But until then, expats are very, very leery of playing any lotteries down here at all. Since you can't be a scratch-off instant winner, we expats realize and know how corrupt and crooked the present system is. Only a fool would shell out a nickel on a scheme like that. But every day in cities large and small, you see the lower classes lining up to buy those things by the fistful from street vendors. These little guys walk around carrying sheets that look like oversized postage stamps that they rip out for you when you buy one. So basically, as far as the middle and lower classes are concerned, there's a huge lag time in the sophistication of the lottery system. Someday that scratch-off instant winner stuff's gonna come here. Then the lotto's really gonna get interesting. But for now, expats should just keep away from that stuff. Now, another thing that's really big and sort of related to gambling are the massive numbers of car lotteries and drawings. Seems like there's a car up for raffle in every Latin American mall that you walk through. High-end malls and low-end malls, it doesn't matter. The only difference being, in the high-end malls, you'll see a Mercedes or a BMW being raffled off. And in the low-end malls, you'll see a cheap Suzuki or a low-end Nissan or Hyundai instead. And who's overseeing these raffles to see that the prize gets awarded in the proper fashion? Nobody. And is there any government department that regulates this kind of stuff? Probably, but I'm sure they don't have the money, the personnel, or even a vehicle to begin to check anything like that out. In fact, it seems like a very profitable business. Looks like all you have to do is create an SA corporation, you know, one of those Sociedad Anonima corporations, in the name of some kind of charity, fictitious or otherwise. For example, here's a so-called charity I've seen actually printed on one of these raffle tickets for cars, which basically translates to the Sisters of St. Mariella charity. And on the ticket, there's a little graphic of the Madonna with a halo and a couple of kids standing around smiling. Yet if you try to look it up on the internet, there's no such saint and there's no such charity. But this is the third world, so who knows? Anyway, this car raffle business seems like a pretty good racket. And as far as needing a permit to do such a thing, well, maybe you do and maybe you don't. Since with some of these raffles, you can actually see the car sitting in the mall with somebody lounging in a plastic chair at a card table selling tickets. But physical proof of an actual car is the exception. Whereas most of the car raffles appear just as photos in small ads in the local cheap newspapers. So who knows if the sponsors of the event actually ever bought a car at all. Now the raffle tickets always give a date, far out in the future, and a phone number you can call to check if you're a lucky winner. And some of the raffle tickets just say, check the newspaper after March 4th, for example, for a list of the winners, since they'll usually offer a second, third, and fourth place prize too, which could also be fantasy items. Who knows, because no one's checking. Now, the going price for a car raffle ticket is usually between $2 and $5, with the vast majority being about $1.50 to $2. And let me tell you, I've been down here over 20 years, and I've known tons of expats, long-term expats, and none of us has ever met anyone who's ever won anything. And I'll admit, all of us at one time or another have bought one or a lot more than one of these car raffle tickets. I'm not going to lie, we've been sucked in too. Especially when it's for the Sisters of Mariella and all those lame, retarded, decrepit children that she's supporting. I mean, look, when you're in a mall walking past a shiny new Mercedes SUV that you know is worth at least $50,000, and they're selling a raffle ticket for $2, it's not very difficult to reach in your pocket and pull out some spare change. Yet we all know deep down inside it's a fool's gamble. Even if it were totally legit, it'd be a fool's gamble, just by the odds. And even if it's somewhat legit, chances are it's the promoter's sister or brother-in-law who's going to walk away with that car. Like I said, who's checking? Now, I have to admit that occasionally in the newspaper, you'll see some lucky guy with a huge smile on his face, shaking the hands of some bank official as he receives the keys to his new car. And you know, that's about the only time you ever see a car being given away legitimately, when a bank or a first world franchise like McDonald's or Sears is doing the promotion. Then, as good PR, the winners always show up in the back pages of the local paper. But you know, it's always photos of somebody winning a Suzuki or a Nissan Sentra or something. Never ever have I ever seen a photo op of a common $300 a month working class guy being handed the keys to a brand new Mercedes SUV. That you never see. A guy like that with such a car would spend his whole monthly income just on insurance, and that would never fly. So you never see photo ops of these common guys winning these high-end cars in the papers. But I can name a few shopping centers right now off the top of my head that are raffling cars exactly like that. They have been doing it and will continue to do so until someone actually checks up on them, which may never happen. So is this an opportunity for expats? Well, for crooked scumbag expats, yes. But I really think if you play it straight and bought a car, you could still make a nice big profit and not cheat anyone. You just do what some of the legit guys do down here. Stretch out the time period for a few months so you know you can make your money back. And think about giving some of the profits to a real charity. One that you control completely. That way you can directly give it to the people who are really in need. And speaking of kind acts by gringos and doing charitable things here, a while ago I told you about the Canadian who drove his trailer down here and came to my seminar with his wife. Well, I can tell you this guy's got a good heart. Along with all the other junk he brought down in his trailer, he brought down 4 computers, used but in decent condition, that he planned on giving to 4 poor, needy families who have kids in school whose parents could never afford to buy them a real computer. And in fact, just a week or so ago, I witnessed him giving one of those computers to just such a needy family. And believe me, in no way is he making a big deal of this at all. He wouldn't even have brought it up to me, except for the fact that he mentioned he brought 5 computers along. And when I asked him what for, he said one was his main computer and the other 4 he planned on giving away. So, 3 cheers for expats, huh? But back to the happy subject of gambling. Now, the most popular gambling method for the lower and lower middle classes is, of course, those lotteries I talked about. But also, bingo is huge in Latin America. But only with the lower classes. Just like in the States, the bingo parlors are just filled with a certain more earthy lower class of people, carnies and white trash and bored middle and lower middle class retired folks who look like they're on their last legs. Down here, the bingo parlors are filled with the dregs, too. And no offense to any of you bingo parlor dregs that might be listening to this show. All I remember is back up in Chicago, at our neighborhood bingo parlor, none of the regulars could ever be accused of doing the New York Times crossword puzzle, if you know what I mean. Okay, enough about that. Now I'd like to talk a little bit more about Mexico and why I don't recommend it as a permanent expat destination. Now in a past show I did mention that there is one section of Mexico that is still relatively safe and untouched. That is, by all that violence and corruption and narco trade that you've been reading about, that's pretty much kept Mexico on the map as the most violent country in the world that's not actually at war with anyone. Well, here's some news coming right out of Mexico City that I'm sure none of you guys have been privy to yet. Now, this article is an interview with a very high-level cop who's been on the Mexican Federal Police Force for over 20 years. And now he works as director of the Institute for Security in the Federal District. His name is Ernesto López Portillo. And here's what he says. He's had friends, Mexican cop friends and cop acquaintances, who actually rent their patrol cars to gangs and delinquents to make extra money when they're off duty. And he has friends who are cops who rent their uniforms to delinquents and gang members. So you guessed it, these criminals can go out posing as cops, dressed in real, 100% authentic police uniforms, driving their cop cars too, with the explicit purpose and intent, of course, to rob, extort, rape, and murder anyone they feel like. And this high-level administrative cop interviewed for this article He says this is not an unusual occurrence. In fact, he says it's common practice throughout Mexico. And he says the public is so aware of such massive corruption that it's accepted as a common everyday part of the social and political environment in Mexico. In fact, he says no one is shocked or surprised at anything that happens regarding corruption within police departments and within the branches of authority. The public, he says, is basically numb to it. And he goes on to say, the rest of the world can't understand how deep the corruption goes within the police departments in Mexico. They can't understand that corruption within the police forms a part of the life of every cop and is culturally accepted by all the members. And he says, according to an organization called the Organization for Civil Transparency in Mexico, they say that in the year 2012, they estimate that there were over 200 million acts of police corruption. That's 200 million. And if these acts of corruption were prosecuted by law, they would have resulted in the firing or incarceration of the officer or officers in question. Then he goes on to say, if these acts were actually discovered and prosecuted, there would be no policemen left in the Mexican police force. They would all be in jail right now or would have been fired. And finally, he says, it should be no surprise to anyone that when a Mexican citizen is confronted by a policeman, the citizen always looks to make an extra official deal with the cop. In other words, a citizen's first thought is always to bribe the cop. And the cops nearly always take the deal. Oh, and another thing this guy said that might shock you. He said, in order for cops who are higher up on the ladder, for example, sergeants, detectives, and lieutenants, to maintain their positions of hierarchy, as well as their offices and territories, and to get promoted, it's common for them to have to kick back some money or pay off their superiors, which gives you an idea of just how corrupt things are in Mexico. Just how futile and impossible it is for any one person to come in and say he's going to reform the Mexican police. The system, he says, is rotten from the inside out, and short of firing every cop and starting from scratch, no one on the inside holds out a ray of hope for any kind of substantial change, even though every new police chief and top political appointee promises reform. For decades, they've been talking reform. And he says when he's long dead, they'll still be talking reform. Okay, you get the point. So what are you supposed to make out of that? Well, all you guys that email me about the wonders of Mexico, telling me I'm nuts for dissing the place or saying that I'm overreacting, well, my advice to you is quit drinking the Kool-Aid.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.